From the front lines.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgate. Representing KTYR and its stakeholders. We are the Forum for the Fans. The Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, welcome to this edition, All Around Football with Azul, Episode 1. College football, pro football, my thoughts over the weekend games. And collegiately and professionally, let's just jump right into it. But first and foremost, I want to apologize. I understand some of the listeners wanted to hear the feedback or the reaction to the post-game episode, Cowboys and Giants, where the Giants got destroyed, right? But we had technical difficulties. They'll pick up the conversation on the preview episode versus the Cardinals on what happened in the disaster Sunday Night Football, Giants getting mollywopped by the Cowboys. I'll touch upon that when I get to the pro football side of things. But I'll start collegiately, and we all know the talk of college football right now with the Colorado Buffaloes. I got to go back to the first week because I wasn't around to discuss this, but go back to the whole transfer portal thing with all the transfer players on the roster, and Deion Sanders takes over, and they go to TCU, a 17th-ranked team in the country, the Horned Frogs in Fort Worth, Texas, where they did a good job winning that game in a back-and-forth fun game, 45-42. A lot of back-and-forth as far as the possessions and a big game by Shador Sanders, the quarterback, the transfer student, Deion Sun from Jackson State. But going to week two, they played Nebraska, and I watched that game. I watched pretty much as many games as I possibly can so I could discuss this stuff, right? So Nebraska, they shot themselves in the foot. The first half turnovers, they killed themselves with the two botched fumbles. Sims, the quarterback for Nebraska, it had an interception that set up the Shador Sanders touchdown pass to Tavarius Daskin to make it 10-0 right before half. I think they had the PAT to make it 10-0. But Nebraska's defense, they kept them in it. They were in striking distance, and I know they were Colorado. You saw in week one the ability to mix and match with establishing the run and passing the rock, where in this game, Colorado could not get nothing on the ground earlier and often, and especially in the first half. They looked kind of out of sync, maybe because of what they did to TCU. But Colorado had a good response touchdown after the Sims touchdown up the right sideline. Shador Sanders had the touchdown pass to Xavier Weaver. Colorado did a good job getting a lot of points in that in the second half. So if you really look at the game in a nutshell, they could score in bunches. They are a talented bunch of guys in Colorado that went over there. And I know the big hype with Travis Hunter. I watched a lot of the Amazon Prime from last season when they were at Jackson State, and he's the two-way player, wide receiver, cornerback. He plays damn near every snap, it seems. Horn Jr. is on that team. Richardson is on that team. Dylan Edwards, the running back. They are a talented, skillful bunch of guys. They will win a lot of games in the Pac-12 this season. They will win a lot of games in the Pac-12. Going back to the TCU game, the fact that they capitalized off of the turnovers, the picks, the Bailey runs, the Colorado Buffaloes, I don't think it's a far-fetched for a team that's definitely, I mean, all you got to do is win 6-7 games, be in the bowl game pretty much. But they're a team that they could really light it up in really bunches, and they have a very good quarterback in Shador Sanders, who's obviously the son of an all-time GOAT. When we talk about GOAT athlete, running the ball, you could run, you know, the RPO, of the pass options there. He's athletic enough to get to his spots to set up the throws, man. He's got a skilled bunch of guys at wide receiver. If some of his linemen actually do a good job with blocking, you saw that in the TCU game as well. But off to a 2-0 start, Colorado. A nice win over Nebraska. A very nice win that really set off the college football map with a lot of people taking notice of what Deion Sanders has brought to that program from Jackson State. Obviously, there's no doubt about it. From my opinion, you know, the way I look at Deion, he's definitely a GOAT. When I say GOAT, look at a guy who's always a multi-sport athlete, track and field, football, baseball on a professional level. Hit for a very good average when he was a pro with the Atlanta Braves. First thing with the Yankees, Atlanta Braves, Cincinnati Reds, and then, of course, Atlanta Falcons, San Francisco 49ers, Dallas Cowboys. Hall of Famer. I mean, and then also coaching up, you know, smart and intellectual analyst, as well as a guy who went up the ranks just from coaching from the youth up into through the HBCU circuit, and then now on the Division I in the Pac-12 with the Colorado Buffaloes, off to a 2-0 start. Shout outs to the Colorado Buffaloes as well. Now the Notre Dame game. Now, they come on off the big win in Dublin, Ireland over the Navy, midshipmen. They had another road game in Raleigh, North Carolina at Carter Finley Stadium versus the Wolfpack, North Carolina State Wolfpack. They just toyed with the Wolfpack, man. They were too physical for them. The play action was working with them. Very good win for the for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, off to 2-0. I know they're in the ACC, in the basketball sense, they're in the ACC, but kind of independent when it comes to the football because of the money they make, and it's just different animal when it comes to Notre Dame football versus the rest of the sports in that program, like most colleges, but it definitely holds weight when it comes to Notre Dame. They just put it on North Carolina State, man. I think they got a pretty much a cupcake next week with Central Michigan at home for their home opener, Notre Dame, but put up 456 yards over the weekend on the road. You know, they just dominated, rushing the rock for 170 yards. Converted on 30% of their first downs, but that game, North Carolina State, who did beat UConn in their opener on the road in Connecticut, but turnaround was faced with a different animal in the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, man. I mean, that's, Hartman has played well for the Fighting Irish, 2 for 4 touchdowns. Estime had ran for 134 yards and 2 touchdowns for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. They got a nice balance of weapons, man. States out there on the white wide receivers front, the catching the rock, leading the charge. But, yeah, they too much Notre Dame over the North Carolina State Wolfpack for your game number 2, and they got an easy game next week. They should handle Central Michigan with no problem. Another game that was actually pretty good through 3 quarters, more of a backyard matchup rivalry, the old Mississippi Running Rebels versus the Tulane Green Wave. I know Mississippi, their campus in Oxford, not too far, maybe a 3 to 4 hour drive, I would think, to New Orleans to play Tulane on the road, who's actually a top 17 team this year, you know, a top 20 team in the Tulane Green Wave. And, you know, I kind of had to do a little bit of research before the start of the season of why they were ranked so high, the AP, and then you play in the American Conference, Ole Miss in the SEC, but this was something I would like to see a little bit more with these interconferences rivalries that we will see starting to see more, not in the Big 12 or the SEC, but you know, some of these teams like Tulane coming out of the American Conference. But Tulane shot themselves in the foot with late in the fourth quarter with the turnovers as well. Mississippi pulling away. Now, I did like them last year when they had the two back running back attack, bringing back Dart as quarterback. He passed pretty efficiently on Saturday with the 2 touchdowns, 267 yards. Get the balance of the he brings the legs to the table as far as running the rock with the RPO. Judkins is your other running back as well for Mississippi. But they ran this game going in the way, man. They just dominated the fourth quarter. The Green Bay was never able to recover. Mekhi Hughes had a good game for Tulane. I think he almost had 100 yards. Not quite there. But that was another game on the schedule that maybe Tulane turns around, but they're not going to have a lot of powerhouse conference foes like they will see, like what Ole Miss will see. So that's a nice road win for Ole Mississippi, the Running Rebels. Now, one game I want to get to with Utah and Baylor. That game almost screwed my pool in the suds because Baylor could have forced an overtime, could have forced the Kansas City overtime. Because what was really weird in that game in Baylor and Waco, Utah pretty much almost screwed me where they tried to run the ball out, where the back did not want to cross the goal line. He wanted to eat the clock and probably kick a late field goal, which was strategy, but he ended up getting tackled in the end zone. So they tried to run it out, but they ended up getting a touchdown where Baylor came almost down the field and gave up a game-tying touchdown with an extra point, or they could have even went for the game winner with 2 points. Possible borderline pass interference in the end zone, which Utah sealed the deal for the victory. I had Utah actually going in there and winning. Utah is a pretty decent team. Baylor will definitely compete this year. They'll probably be better next year with the guys returning. But good win by the Utah Utes. I thought it was a little unique that they almost forced the overtime with the pass interference in the end zone. That's what it really came down to in that game. That was really that has my high, with the football over the weekend. You can never trust Judd Fisher, Jumbo Fisher, with the Texas A&M Aggies. They had a rough second half of the year last year, the Texas A&M Aggies. And I thought they would at least went to Miami Gardens and went on the road where the crowd is not sold out. Texas A&M, they let me down, man. They definitely did, man. Well, I wouldn't say they let me down. They let the country down. It's almost like you can't buy their hype. Texas A&M, they just and that fourth quarter was just bad. Now, Connor Wingman, who had did his part, threw for 336 yards, 2 touchdowns. They got some balance with Evan Stewart out at wide receiver. But, man, the defense for the Aggies could not stop anything, man. Tyler Van Dyke, who had a monster game, threw for 5 touchdowns, 374 yards. Rhys Pestro had a nice game for 126 yards receiving for the Hurricanes. Every time people think or ranking the Texas A&M Aggies, and to me it's almost like a why. Big letdown game by the Aggies, man, for real. And it really happened in the fourth quarter. Watching that game, that was like the 3:30 game. And, of course, Texas A&M definitely come back. That's not a division or a conference game. So they'll see teams like Texas and they'll see teams in the SEC that they will have to compete against, the LSUs and the Alabamas. But, wow, the way they went out in Miami, that's one game you kind of need to keep on your Rolodex to accumulate wins for a bowl game or possible put themselves in the position national championship implications. But now that's out the window, losing to Miami, because I don't see them making up for that particular game, man. So Texas A&M falling to the Miami Hurricanes, man. What unfortunate stuff, man. Now, I could talk about what USC did to Stanford on Saturday night. Caleb Williams and the Trojans just destroying the Stanford Cardinal, who are just trying to find their way in the Pac-12. And then what happened with Washington State and Wisconsin over the week? Wisconsin trying to make the comeback. Well, Washington State, they just pulled away at the end. With a nice win, they were up early. Washington State, the Cougars, Oregon, nice win in Lubbock, Texas. I had to go back and watch some of the end of that game. But outside of that, you know, we could talk about Duke and what they're going to face in the ACC. They had the big win over Clemson week one. And then, you know, not too surprising, but North Carolina with the big win over South Carolina. And, you know, Spencer Rattler, I just feel it got some overrated vibes. And you can blame it on the South Carolina defense if you want. But North Carolina with a double overtime win against Appalachian State, riding that momentum, Matt Brown's team riding the momentum after winning in Charlotte on neutral – well, I guess you could call it a neutral site with the rivalry game between South Carolina week one. But the game I really was paying attention to at, you know, at 8 o'clock was Texas-Alabama. We saw that game last year. That game was in Austin where Bryce Young was the quarterback for the Alabama Crimson Tide, and that was a nail-biter where Texas just fell short, where Alabama squeaked it out. Well, the tide has turned, no pun intended. Quinn Ewers, the quarterback for Texas, he had an excellent second and fourth quarters, yo. He had two touchdowns to Adonai Mitchell. He had the early go-ahead touchdown in the fourth quarter and the insurance run by Jonathan Brooks. Alabama does not like – they do not look like Alabama. Week one, you could probably say, you know, week one jitters, they've been around the block, they'll figure it out. But now Texas is now being in the SEC, and then after how they lost to Alabama last year, I thought Alabama would have – they normally win these games at home in Tuscaloosa. They normally win those games at Bryant Finney. But I am a little shocked that Texas literally outplayed the Alabama Crimson Tide. And it's not too often in the regular season you say Nick Saban was outplayed. I was a little shocked at that, man, especially Texas outgaining them in total yards out the game. They won the second and fourth quarters, and that was a big difference in the game, you know. Jontavian Sanders had a good game receiving yards for the Texas Longhorns. And Alabama was probably, a 7-8-point favorite going into this game, so this was considered an upset. Jalen Milroe had a bad game. His accuracy was shot. He barely passed for 50% of his completions, and he was just missing guys. Definitely did not. Alabama in the Nick Saban era has been known for running the rock real well with whether it's Trent Richardson, Mark Ingram, Josh Jacobs. I mean, they've had nothing but a factory of running backs under the Nick Saban tenure. But Jace McClellan in a big game only had 45 yards, man. And that's not typical Alabama. This is not what we kind of don't quite normally see, especially getting passed on like that. Now, we've seen this in spurts in bigger games in the playoff system, like when they played the Bulldogs and they went up against like Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa. You've seen that, like, getting up lit up in big yards or versus Clemson versus Deshaun Watson, but never really in the regular season like that, and especially at home. Very, very shocking, I would say, or surprising to watch on the college football front. So after the first 2 weeks, I mean, really the story, with Colorado, I think the country is revolving around Deion Sanders and what he's bringing all these transfer players to the table under one helm, because we've never seen this before pretty much in college football, because of the dynamics of players staying on one team, can't transfer unless being redshirted. And now you see everybody else, you know, your top 10, I mean, Michigan handled UNLV. That was easy money. Florida State in week one when they beat up on LSU, especially in the fourth quarter, you know, Jordan Travis had his way, with especially with his new weapon from Michigan State, the 6'4 wide receiver, Keon Coleman. So you start to see the shakeup, who is who. If you want to buy some of the USC stock out in the Pac-12, that maybe have the competition with Utah and Oregon. I mean, I remember that they were talking about how that conference was going to be a little bit of a weakling, but it looks real strong with Utah up in there and Oregon, USC, and Oregon State is a team that do not sleep on. Alabama should still be in the top 10. but barely. I think I could arguably say there's going to be other teams like Tennessee, I think, are better. Ohio State, they played Youngstown State, and I saw them give them, you know, it was easy work for them, and they had to wait one win in Indiana. I definitely want. I'm looking forward to that Ohio State Penn State. It is due for Penn State to get a win against them. Definitely due. So, just top level stuff, college football. As I transition to the pro football and get to the rest of the NFL, and wow, what a interesting week two. Actually, week one in the National Football League. Week two for the college. Week one for the NFL. Where do I start, man? Where do I start with the pros, man? Because I saw a lot of these games. And the Cardinal game and the Commander game, we could start there. Just pretty much self-scouting because, you know, with the football, with the KGYR platform, we are Giants-based person. We know we played the Cardinals in week two. You'll hear the preview and the postgame outside the technical difficulties coming up this week. But self-scouting, I was watching the Cardinals defense do a very good job with three turnovers in the first half. They brought in Joshua Dobbs. He was traded like late August because of the injury to Kyler Murray. This guy didn't even work out with his wide receivers like Hollywood Brown, Zach Ertz, the tight end. But they were actually in this game, had a lead, a 6-point lead, especially throughout that third quarter. It started to rain in D.C. at FedEx Field. It started to rain hard. And surprisingly, Arizona was playing better when it was raining. I was watching this game. I'm like, damn. They were handling Sam Howell and the Commanders had no – they had no answer. They really had no answer. Jalen Thompson, there was a big moment, I say a partial moment, where Jalen Thompson should have had a pick – off of for the Cardinals, should have had an interception through the hands of Brian Robinson, the running back for the Commanders. It went through his hands in the third quarter. Crucial moment in the game because on the third down late in the third quarter, De'Ron Payne and the defensive line for the Commanders really turned it up, and they forced the fumble on Dobbs. And Montez Sweat had a big second half, man. He had a big hit that was helped to cause the fumble. Sam Howell ended up getting a touchdown out of that to go back up where it went up 17-16 with 4 minutes left, with 4 minutes and 40 seconds left in the game. Later on, man, Montez Sweat also did it again. He knocked out the ball off of a Joshua Dobbs botched snap, and he actually knocked the ball out of his hands to cause another fumble recovery by the Commanders. And then the last drive under the 2 minutes, you see Jonathan Allen, another defensive lineman for the Commanders that just got him in waves. That's a top three, top five defensive lineman with a hit on Dobbs to really put the game away. So big win. They got the new ownership going on with D.C., with Magic Johnson and that team. A lot of fans, they were loud, man. That place was loud week one, man. Got to give them props for a good come-from-behind, ugly football win. With the Washington Commanders over the Arizona Cardinals. Then the other games. Go through the other games. That I'm trying to tell y'all, man, the Browns are a sleeper team to make the playoffs. As long as the quarterback is playing most of the games and they don't have a significant injury, Deshaun Watson and the defense of the Cleveland Browns, they smothered the Bengals, man. The Bengals had a big letdown game. Probably the second worst of the day outside of the Giants. We'll get to that later, of course. But standalone game, the Battle of Ohio, the Bengals offense could not do not a thing. They could not do a thing. And the one thing about watching the Cleveland Browns, and if you're a defensive guy, I mean, watching Myles Garrett is a special treat to say. Just the fact that coming off that left tackle edge, coming around that corner, dipping his shoulders, twisting his hips, chasing down Joe Burrow. He's just a simple menace, man. Straight up menace out there on that field. Deshaun Watson had the rollout touchdown pass to Harrison Bryant, and I'm telling you, they have the run game, of course, with Nick Chubb. The offensive line is not great, and the defense is serviceable. They were missing the quarterback, of course, and they got him late last year after the hiatus with the suspension. I really believe the Cleveland Browns have a shot to make the playoffs. I really do in a loaded AFC conference. And they have the big piece in the quarterback. He's a winning quarterback. We all know that. National champion with the Clemson Tigers. And, of course, has some okay success with the Houston Texans. Did not work out, obviously, with the things that were going on. But the Cleveland Browns, be on the lookout for them. The team that's probably going to come out the NFC or has a good chance to come out the NFC, that is the San Francisco 49ers. They dominated the Pittsburgh Steelers. So much balance. They should have went the Philadelphia one if it wasn't for the quarterback getting hurt, Brock Purdy. Overwhelmed the Steelers, especially running the ball. You saw Christian McCaffrey get the big touchdown, spin moves between left tackle, left guard, and, of course, run it scampered down the sidelines, getting great blocking by the wide receivers and Brandon Ayuk. Steelers, I'm not buying the Steelers stunt like I think a lot of fans are. It's not because of the reputation of the organization. I just don't think they're quite there. Coming off of the Ben Roethlisberger era and having that main guy, Kenny Pickett, I'm not as sold as him as the franchise quarterback for the Steelers. But from a Niners perspective, I mean, they are loaded. They are primed to get to a Super Bowl with a roster like that. They're scary to play because they can beat you many ways. They can beat you running the ball, and they can beat you passing the ball. And they got pass rushes to get after the quarterback, and they have above-average linebackers. I mean, they got it all, man. They really got it all. So, big win by the 49ers. No surprise there, beating up on the Steelers. I was also watching the Jacksonville Jaguar game versus the Colts. You saw Calvin Ridley make his debut with the Jaguars. He got a touchdown early on in the game, and Zay Thomas ended up getting a touchdown as well. Jacksonville has some nice weapons, and, of course, Trevor Lawrence is a very good quarterback. They had a very good first half. And especially Calvin Ridley, who had like 7 receptions in the first half, but then kind of went quiet or went off the radar a little bit. The guard, Brandon Scherff, he got hurt, so I'm not exactly sure what his injury status is or was. But outside of that, there was a play by Michael Pittman who caught a wide receiver screen to tie up the game at 14-14. But after that, it was pretty much all Jacksonville. There was a touchdown run by Brisby. They go up 24-21. There was also a flash from the pass from the Clemson ties with Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne. There was a burst, a 25-yard run to go up 31-21. Travis Etienne looks fresh. Remember, he hurt himself his rookie year, and it takes a year pretty much to come back from some of these leg injuries. But he looks fresh and looks good. Looks fast, and in the AFC South, it should be the Jaguars and pretty much whoever could be next. Maybe the Titans. I don't have stock on the team I'm about to say next in the Houston Texans because they're trying to get back into the winning ways. But good win by the Jaguars over the Colts. Anthony Richardson actually played well in this game, but it was really more about the Jaguars' offense, the diversity of the wide receivers, the new weapons, and a refresh weapon in Travis Etienne and out of the backfield, and Brisby, too. Nice 1-2 punch by them in Doug Peterson's offense. Houston at the Houston Texans at the Baltimore Ravens. C.J. Stroud, the Ohio State quarterback, his debut. I got to say it like this. Sometimes when you lose, you win, and sometimes when you win, you lose. That is the old quote from Rosie Perez and White Man Can't Jump. And this is the game where I say, well, Baltimore won the game. However, suffered a significant injury to J.K. Dobbins with a torn Achilles coming off the field. Yes, they beat the Houston Texans, but him leaving that game, him losing that 1-2 punch, he was an effective play day, and especially him, he did not see a big payday. That's unfortunate for him. He's probably not going to get the maximum dollars now with that Achilles injury. That is just a bad break, man. And this is the reason why these running backs have these, or players in general, but especially running backs, they got it or they want that payday because of their security for situations like this. And I am sorry for the J.K. Dobbins and his family and his peers for not going to be able to reach that. I don't see that happening because of the nature of the business. But Baltimore would have easily easy command win over the Houston Texans at home for their home opener, man. I did not see a lot of that Carolina Panther Atlanta Falcon game. I know Bryce Young started. To be honest, I did not watch a lot of that game. I know Atlanta won. I'll just leave it at that. They had a 2-touchdown win, so I'll just leave it at that. I did see more of the end with the Titans at the Saints. Derek Carr had a opening debut at the Superdome, 300-yard passing game. He has a nice little shared weapon with that Shaheed kid, man. That guy's a little fast, man. There was a play where he caught a ball along the sidelines, and they tried, you know, they went to review, and they upheld the call on the field. But an ugly, low-scoring, you know, you don't see those a lot over the last 15 years, especially the Sean Payton and Drew Brees years in New Orleans, where it was only a 15-13 win by the Saints and the Titans, who ended up getting DeAndre Hopkins and, of course, Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill at quarterback. I don't know what Vrabel, the head coach, is going to do with Tennessee. I thought this was a winnable game by them, and they got to muster up a lot of offense because this is a team that did not generate a lot of offense last year. So, good win by the Saints, 1-0. Atlanta Falcons, 1-0. Who else in the division? Oh, yeah, Tampa Bay. They beat up on the Minnesota Vikings. So there's three teams in the 1-0. The only team that did not win was the Carolina Panthers, who played the Falcons. So, I saw the Vegas game, Vegas Bronco game in Denver, the debut for Sean Payton as head coach. And I know there's been a lot of rumblings of what Sean Payton has said to about Nathaniel Hackett, the former head coach of the Broncos from the previous season, now head offensive coordinator with Aaron Rodgers with the Jets. But opening kick of this game, did you see this shit? And an onside kick that was not recovered by the Broncos. Ended up as the opening drive for Jimmy Garoppolo getting a touchdown to Myers on the opening drive. Russell Wilson had an okay game, but ended up, had a nice drive before half. But damn, he on that drive before the half, it was a good camaraderie to get them nice chunks of yards, and there's going to be a lot of Russell Wilson to Cortland Sutton combination throughout the season, especially with the O-line protection that they got. So there was in the first half for Russell Wilson under the Sean Payton offense, he went 17-for-19 for 125 yards and 2 touchdowns. Not a bad first half with a season debut. But it really came down to what happened after the two-minute warning with Jimmy Garoppolo getting that 8-yard run to seal the deal in the Las Vegas, milking out or pretty much running out the clock and Sean Payton not having any timeouts. And that was pretty much all she wrote. So that was a good road win for the division, the old AFC West, and whether they are the Oakland Raiders, the Los Angeles Raiders, Las Vegas Raiders, California Raiders, whatever Raiders. Very even game. Teams was pretty much even in total yards, even first downs. It was pretty much a nip-and-tuck game with five third downs, both teams going 5 out of 11. But, yeah, it really came down to the timeout situation by Sean Payton and Jimmy Garoppolo getting that 8-yard run on third down. So, yeah, kudos to them. Let's see. The game, another game I was watching, and Tom Brady being celebrated with the Patriots right before the start of the game, the Eagles versus the Patriots. It was really the battle of Alabama quarterbacks. Jalen Hurts for the Eagles and Mac Jones for the New England Patriots. You saw a lot of Gainwell getting a lot of touches early on in the first half for the Eagles. Because Miles Sanders now is the running back on the, he got the payday with the Panthers. I don't think they are as strong at running back as they were last year. They might have to get somebody. Maybe they'll have another running back to that roster because they don't look as strong. It's not the same accustomed Philadelphia Eagles offense after week one that we are used to. Maybe you could say it was the weather conditions in Foxborough because it was raining. It rained a lot in that game. New England had a good, a lot of good third down stops against Hurts, and it ended up, you know, they got a weapon in Elliott who makes a lot of field goals for the Philadelphia Eagles. As you already know, as Giant fans, you know, we've seen a lot of Elliott field goals along the way. Darius Slay Jr. had a pick six in this game. It was a ball that was not Matt Jones' fault. It went off the wide receiver. I forgot the guy's name. Number 84 for the Patriots. Darius Slay Jr. Returned that pick six for making it a 10-0 game. Even Devontae Smith caught a touchdown a touchdown pass from Jalen Hurts, making it 16-0, and they missed the PAT. But the Patriots hung around, man. They did not. I thought the Eagles would have blown them out. But New England hung around, man. They really did. Matt Jones had a 20-yard touchdown pass to Kendrick Bourne. They came back in this game to make it 16-14. To go to the fourth quarter, after New England got the touchdown, they cut the lead to 25-20, and they had a two-point conversion. They got it, but they had to get it called back because of holding. They ended up not getting the two-point conversion. On the next possession by the Eagles on third down, where a quarterback keeper, a play call by Jalen Hurts, it was a clean hit by Jabril Peppers for the Patriots, made Jalen Hurts fumble the ball. The England was in striking distance to actually take the lead in this game. But if it was, you know, if it wasn't for the pass rush by Josh Sweat, he beat the tackle Brown like a drum and really took New England and really cut the playbook in half and really sealed the deal. I know New England ended up getting a reception, but the guy was out of bounds, and New England losing to the Philadelphia Eagles 25-20. The Green Bay Chicago game, you saw Jordan Love. I wanted to see some of the hype of what that was. That game was very boring in the first half. It was really a snooze fest. He had a couple of touchdowns to Dubs. But Justin Fields, on the other hand, there was some questionable play that he had. There was a second down. He should have threw the ball away, and he lost a lot of yards by getting tackled by Kenny Clark, who had a monster game, by the way. Big game by Kenny Clark. Taking him out of field goal range or set up some sort of points, more maximize their points with at least a touchdown. It happened again on the third quarter, where Justin Fields was scrambling and Kenny Clark gets him for, a 10-yard loss, you know, and caused a fumble on the very next possession. He was a monster out there. Aaron Jones had a touchdown, but I think he went out of the game with a hamstring to go up 17-6. Packers was up 24-6 late in the third quarter. And, you know, at that point, I was like, man, this game's out, because I was actually more in tune with the Miami Dolphin Charger game. Justin Fields hit Darnell Moody with a touchdown, and he got the two-point conversion to make it 24-14. So I kind of stuck with this game for a little bit. And then I was trying to get to some of that Rams-Seahawks game, because I wasn't really paying attention to that outside of some plays I saw. I think DK Metcalf had a touchdown. But Jordan Love actually played well in that second half, man. He had a five-play, 61-yard drive to set up a touchdown to go up 31-14. And then somehow I went away from this game, and I come back, it was 38-14. I didn't know how they got that. Then when I went back to look at the highlights, I saw that Green Bay had a pick six. I was like, wow. They just, no matter if it was Favre, it doesn't matter if it's Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love, they find a way to beat the Bears, man. Now, this was the game of the goddamn day, was the Miami Charger game. I already knew this was the game of the day because we've seen them play last year. This is one of those games where whoever has the ball last was pretty much going to win, and that was pretty much what you saw. This Miami Dolphin Charger game, they played against each other. Remember, Miami went on the road last year. They played the Niners on that road trip and ended up playing the Chargers. This is the same shit. Tua had to start. So many passes to Jaylen Waddle. I mean, so much speed. As long as he stays healthy, man, they're going to be fun to watch. The Chargers had an epic collapse last year versus the Jaguars in Jacksonville last year. So I wanted to see how they're going to come out in this game this open a game this year. Justin Herbert had a deep pass to Keenan Allen up the left sideline, running the ball, the 1-2 punch with Kelly and Austin Eckler. Kelly had a touchdown run. Austin Eckler had a 55-yard run, was like the longest of his career. That set up the one-yard touchdown at the goal line with Keenan Allen. Miami on that very next possession, they go right down the field, get a touchdown by Raheem Mostert, the running back. But Miami got so many fucking wide receivers, man, with River Kravkoff, Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill had a monster game as well, especially in the second half. But even the drive before the half, man, Miami went up 17-14 with the Kravkoff touchdown pass from Tua Let's put it like this, Tua. Let me get a sip of this. I'm getting, my mouth is getting calm. I'm talking all this football, man. The third quarter, it comes at the start of the third quarter. Justin Herbert, he had a quarterback keeper. They had a nice drive to start the third quarter, go up 24-20. Tua had a nice pass to hit Tyreek Hill. I mean, that's just a work of art. I mean, they were doing that last year. You're going to see a lot of that this year. That 1-2 punch between Hill gets a pass. It's like almost like hero ball. Then Waddle gets a pass. They get an end zone. They ended up with an end zone interception by J.C. Jackson of the Chargers to kill that drive. But Miami's defense stepped it up with a cornerback blitz. It almost caused a safety. Herbert almost got caught with a safety in the end zone, but they didn't. And the Chargers ended up punting that shit away. Then next thing you know, Tua finds Tyreek Hill with a big touchdown pass to go up 27-24 by the end of the third quarter. The Chargers get that shit right back with a Kelly touchdown at the very start of the fourth quarter. But it was pretty much a back-and-forth game. Tyreek Hill get hit he hits him with a fade with a pitiful pass with 1:45 remaining in the game. Miami takes a 36-34 lead, but they missed the point after. So this game, they had like 7 fucking lead changes. Crazy, right? But Miami's defense really stepped up at the end, man. Herbert was trying to set up the screen, but if you saw the play, the running back didn't get out far enough in time, and Herbert throws the pass, and the refs call him for intentional grounding. So it goes to 2nd-20 with a loss of down. Miami gets pretty much back-to-back sacks. They got one sack up the middle, one play. They became 3rd-30, and then next thing you know, Phillips ends the game on another sack, and that was all she wrote, where Miami, as of right now, that's the game of the year, even through week one. Big game win over the fucking, over the Chargers. And then, of course, the last game, what a joke of that was. And we, like I said, we apologize what happened with that shit. We were supposed to have a post game. Giants getting smoked by the Cowboys, but we had technical difficulties, so I'm pretty sure we'll have the guys will talk about what happened in the preview game on Thursday versus the Cardinals. I mean, wow. I mean, if you was to ask me on this game, a lot of shit went wrong, and I talked about this with Brian from the Big Hitters Corner podcast when I was on his show about the special teams, and this came into fruition very early. With the punt, with the block and the return, not able to block up front. But I also look at this also with the quarterback. We don't have that kind of quarterback who's going to change his protection, change plays at the line of scrimmage like that. If you really go back and watch some of this game, he doesn't do that. And the Giants film is going to catch up with a lot of opponents this year if the Giants don't make that adjustment with the quarterback. Everything went bad last night. It was raining. The conditions, the ball slips, the not able to can't stop the run. He couldn't get after the quarter. He couldn't get after Dak Prescott. It was a very, very embarrassing loss to say. Probably one of the worst losses in regular season that I could think of with the Giants, especially on the Sunday night football stage in front of America or the world. But that's pretty much all the games collegiately and pro. Like I said, from college side of things, Texas beating Alabama, that was a little bit surprised with the 7-point, the underdog. Edwards had a good game as well. Utah getting by Baylor, that's the game, that game. And then North Carolina was a overtime win over Appalachian State. But Wisconsin trying to come back against Washington State did not happen. And then also the other game with Colorado, pretty much turned it on against Nebraska. That's a team that could score in bunches. They have the weapons to do it. Like, I've seen enough Western. Man, they got the blocking. They have the skill set guys outside. They'll make it happen. And then on the pro side, Arizona's defense was a sleeper. I would not sleep on them next week going into week number two. They got a journeyman, but a backup quarterback going into that game. Washington defense, especially their line, looks like Washington's defensive line. Miami and the Chargers offensively look good. The Cleveland Browns are a sleeper. Nice win by the Rams on the road. And then the Cowboys defense pretty much fucking dominated Sunday night. So by the time you hear this episode or sometime in the morning, you'll have, you know, Bills and Jets will not have a reaction to that game. But catch the next football episode, with the preview with the Giants and the Cardinals here. But we'll catch up collegiately in the pro football. I wanted to catch up on that on our episode number one, All Around Football with Azul, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. Did I miss anything? Oh, yeah, the Denver game. Yeah, Sean Payton kind of showed his ass about that, man, talking all that shit. I don't really necessarily get into that, but it was kind of a big deal. The media kind of played that up. For Jimmy G to get that 8-yard scamper to end the game with a lack of timeouts as well, and then to talk about the lack of offense by the Broncos and pretty much not put up a lot of points at home on your opener, that's kind of a little sad to say. Like I said, about Baltimore with J.K. Dobbins going out the Achilles. That's a bad break by the Ravens, man. Good win, but lose the war. Let's see if they can get a running back off the street. This is why these guys want to get their contracts, man. Hope you enjoyed the episode with the college and the pro. Sangre Azul, ladies and gentlemen. Bleed blue.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Bleep blue, bleep blue, bleep blue, bleep blue, bleep blue, bleep blue, bleep blue.